This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. America's Latino population is swelling. Nowhere is that happening more quickly than in the Southeast. And in the Southeast, Atlanta and Charlotte lead the way. This has been happening since the early 90s, and this dramatic growth is having an impact on local demographics, on the workforce, on schools, in short, on just about every aspect of life in the Queen City. Growth like this presents challenges, not just to longtime residents, but to those relocating here as well. These newcomers deal with questions of identity, inclusion, culture, how to fit in while not losing who they are, where they come from, and their traditions. The Levine Museum of the New South's latest exhibition, Nuevolution, details what has been called the most important story in Southern history since the Civil Rights Movement. And here to take us through the main points of that exhibit is Emily Zimmern, president of the Levine Museum of the New South. Welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you, Mike.
Also with us is Oliver Marino, Latino New South coordinator at the Levine Museum. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you.
And they're both with us in our Spirit Square studio. With us by phone is Eduardo Diaz, director of the Smithsonian Latino Center. Thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure to be here.
In this election cycle, all we seem to hear about is immigration and how it impacts Texas and the rest of the Southwest. If the Southeast has been outpacing the rest of the nation, particularly Charlotte, at least in terms of the growth of the number of Latinos, why haven't we been hearing about that from these politicians?
Well, I'm not a political expert, but I think that that's partly why we're telling the story. It's a little known story because Texas has a much longer immigration history and it's a border state. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the southeastern U.S. has outpaced the nation, as you said. And for our part of the country, that's a real transformation. I mean, for a part of the country that was long known for its black and white racial landscape, and for most of the 20th century had the fewest foreign-born, this is a new story. But I think it's a much more complicated story, and too many politicians like simple ideas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Is that why, what you just said, is that why you call this the most important story in Southern history since the Civil Rights Movement?
Absolutely. It is changing the entire South. Latinos are reshaping the South. The South is reshaping Latinos. And this is the newest New South. We are being reinvented. And no matter who you are, Latino, non-Latino, we're all adapting to life in a multicultural, multi-ethnic South. And that is a sea change for the U.S. South.
What is it about Charlotte and Atlanta? Charlotte leads Atlanta in this, and Atlanta and Charlotte lead the Southeast in this trend. What is it about our two cities?
Well, back in the day, the very beginnings of this migration were building Bank of America Tower. There were literally contractors who were looking for laborers. There weren't enough construction workers. And then they recruited people in Texas. They came and basically, like Charlotte, it's first of all, it's more immigrant friendly than some of the states. We haven't passed, at least not yet, any kind of draconian anti-immigrant laws in North Carolina. We have a strong economy. We are known for entrepreneurialism, and immigrants are twice as likely as native-born to start businesses. And basically, it's just a great place to live. Not only are Latinos coming, as you well know, but we're one of the fastest growing cities in the country with people from elsewhere in the U.S. and immigrants from elsewhere besides Latin America.
Hmm. Let me give some figures out that I got, I think, from you guys. Give you a thumbnail, as I guess is the best way to say it, of what actually is going on here in terms of the growth. Mm-hmm. Between 2000 and 2010, the Latino population in the South grew by 57%. And as you say, this is an area of the country that had the fewest immigrants in the history of the country. Everybody else went to the Northeast and other parts of the country. According to Nielsen, who I thought just rated television shows, but according to Nielsen, Charlotte's and Atlanta's Latino population is up 400%, over 400% mm-hmm. since 2000. And in this state, more than two dozen small and mid-sized municipalities are over 20% Latino. Charlotte leads the way. More Latinos are coming here than anywhere else in the Southeast. Is it just what Emily said? I mean, you're new to here, Oliver. Is it just what Emily said about building the Bank of America Tower and our good economy and our being semi-inclusive? Or are there other factors at work here in your mind?
Actually, I was talking yesterday to someone from Puerto Rico, and he was telling me, I've never would have thought about moving to Charlotte. I've never would have thought of bringing my family here. And he watches a channel about news from Puerto Rico, and they give the weather from Charlotte. That just to show you just how many people, are looking to Charlotte. But, my experience.
But let me stop it. I'll get to your experience, but let's be clear here. People coming from Puerto Rico are not immigrants.
No, because they
are American citizens.
No, but like Emily said, people are coming from everywhere, you know, and the people that are not native to the South, and they're bringing their culture, their language, and their worldview here, and they're reshaping the city. I've talked to people that have been living in Charlotte for a very long time, and they tell me like how much it has changed, mm-hmm. not only regarding the Latino community, but overall. Like they still remember where like Uptown was, deserted after midnight. But these changes, as Emil said, these changes are difficult for everyone, mm-hmm. The receiving community, and also the newcomers. And there's challenges that come with it, but also opportunities. That's what we want people to see as well.
Eduardo Diaz, you're with the Smithsonian, so I'll get the 30,000-foot view from you because you don't live here, and I guess you're in Washington. Is that what makes this exhibit intriguing to you at the Smithsonian? We'll talk about how this exhibit came about and the museums involved in developing it, but is this why it's intriguing to you because of the influx of people to this region of the country?
Yes, absolutely. It absolutely is. I mean, I guess I should start really with a visit that my eldest daughter made to the museum. It's been several years now. My daughter is a professor in Latino studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara, but she had a layover of several hours in Charlotte, and she texted me. Kids today don't really call their parents anymore. They usually just text them. But at any rate, so she texted me and said, well, I'm stuck in Charlotte. My connection doesn't leave for 4 hours. What should I do? And I had heard about an exhibition at this museum in Charlotte. Of course, I was with Levine. I didn't know it. And I said, well, I heard that there's an interesting exhibition on kites and immigrant stories. That's all I knew, basically. And I said, why don't you go down? When I was texting her, I kind of found out that it was a Levine. I said, this is called Levine. I think they have a shuttle from the airport downtown that we can just go into town, see the show, get back to the airport, make your connection. And she did, and she actually called me back and told me how moved she was by the exhibition, which Emily can talk about and Oliver can talk about later. But the notion was, that these were the exhibition was of kites that children made who were subject to the deportation or dealing with the deportation of their parents, right? It was terribly moved. And so from that point on, I said, wow, this is interesting. Now, what's going on there? And then I just started nosing around, and the obvious demographic, I mean, you just know that these demographic changes, right, are happening in the South, right? And it's not only in North Carolina, it's both Carolinas, it's Alabama, it's Georgia, it's, Arkansas, it's the deep, all of the deep South. And, we're here supposedly trying to be on top of things, right, at the national level, from a Latino perspective, and we're a little bit asleep at the wheel, right? So based on that visit of my daughter and her review of what was taking place at Levine, I just got more and more interested. And I said, well, I had never been to Charlotte, so that's obviously not good. So I went down and spent some time with Emily and Oliver and the staff and came to find out about the exhibition project, the Latino New South project, and then I went on to Atlanta and then Birmingham and spoke to the colleagues over there that are also involved with this project. And it was like, this whole new world opened to me. And so from the 30,000-foot vantage point, I said, wow, this is happening in this part of the country, and we're not focused on it. There's something wrong here. So the Smithsonian, at least through my office, personally and then through a modest contribution and just moral support and just a continuing interest. And in fact, I've rallied other entities here at the Smithsonian to take a deeper look at this.
Well, you brought this up, so let's get into this a little bit. This is a joint project between the Levine Museum of the New South, the Atlanta History Center, and the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. And from what I understand, it's already received national attention, and I guess that's where the Smithsonian comes in. I thought you recruited the Smithsonian, Emily, but obviously they came to you.
Yes, I definitely came to them,
and it was received very well, obviously. Emily's great. I mean, Oliver, the crew at the Levine is doing amazing work. And then when my trips to Atlanta and Birmingham, the same story. I mean, they just have been so welcoming. And it's not like, you know, here comes the big bad Smithsonian from Washington coming to town. No, it's really quite the opposite. We're coming to learn and respond affirmatively to what's going on there and do what we can as, quote-unquote, the nation's museum. Right, so the nation's museum is also a regional museum. In other words, the regional is now national, and we have to, I think, in my view, get out of the beltway, if you will, you know, outside of the beltway, and focus on what's happening in our communities around the country. So for me, kind of a no-brainer, right?
So Emily, Emily, how did this come together with the three museums? Did you start this?
Levine Museum of the New South initiated this. actually, we had the great good fortune of receiving one of the inaugural National Innovation Lab for Museums grants. The Center for the Future of Museums, which is a national think tank, put out a call for proposals in 2011. They look at trends that are impacting the museum field, and one was demographics, because they had learned from a previous study that only 1 in 10 core museum visitor of all museums was a person of color. And given our national demographic trends, that's not a course. I mean, that they're on a collision course.
Except you were already beating that trend.
Oh, we were beating that a long time ago. But we said we really wanted to do an exhibition that would document and help us understand this major hinge in history, this demographic transformation that we were experiencing with the arrival of Latinos. And we also, as institutions, wanted to engage and Latino communities and develop strong partnerships in our own self-interest, because we want to serve the community as it exists. So we had always wanted to collaborate broadly, but we had never, as a small institution, had the resources. And so we invited Atlanta and Birmingham, who were colleagues from other work that we had known in the field, and they said, sure, and we received one of those grants. And so for a year, we had the funding and the support of probably the most skilled facilitator I've ever worked with to serve in helping us figure out what is it that we were going to test in the Innovation Lab. And Latino New South was innovative both in content and in process. The content, this demographic transformation, but the process, we held listening sessions with Latinos and non-Latinos for 2 days in each of our three cities to really understand at a very grassroots level what was happening in our cities with the arrival of Latinos.
We'll talk more about that. We'll talk about this exhibit. We'll talk about the impact of Latinos on the New South and the New South on those Latinos. And we'll hear more from Oliver Marino, who has personal experience with this, because he's, although he's a native-born American, I believe. No, you're not. Okay, I'm from Mexico. Excuse me, I forgot about that. He has some things to talk about. Also, Eduardo Diaz with the Smithsonian is with us as well. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bradley Arant Bolt Cummings LLP, a full-service law firm whose lawyers are industry professionals experienced in serving the banking and financial services industry in Charlotte and throughout the nation. Details at babc.com. And Charlotte Latin School, with a kindergarten through grade 5 admissions open house October 9th at 9:30 a.m. and an open house for grade 6 through 12 October 16th at 9:30 a.m. Details at charlottelatin.org. Tomorrow on this program at 9 o'clock, we're broadcasting from the McGlowan Theater here at Spirit Square. You're invited to be part of the audience and ask your own questions of the two Democratic candidates for Charlotte Mayor, Jennifer Roberts and Dan Clodfelter. It's live tomorrow at 9 at McGlowan Theater. Check our website for more details.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama addresses the UN General Assembly and meets with world leaders, including Russian President Vladimir Putin. New tests for U.S. leadership, prospects for cooperation on Syria, and the fight against ISIS.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon on listener-funded public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the exhibit in residence through October 30th at the Levine Museum of the New South.
2016. This is a 13-month run.
Lord, all right. Well, I didn't know that. Thank you for telling me. It's called Nuevo. I can't say it. It's called Nuevolution. It's a contraction of two different words.
It's a Spanglish word.
Thank you
made
very much.
Made up, which is the point.
Emily Zimmern's with us. She's the president of the Levine Museum of the New South. Oliver Marino is with us. He's the Latino New South coordinator. And Eduardo Diaz, director of the Smithsonian Latino Center, also with us. I mentioned earlier in the program that there are over two dozen towns in North Carolina where Latinos make up more than 20% of the population. How did these folks come to choose these small towns in North Carolina? Do you have any idea, Oliver?
Well, I live in one of those towns.
Monroe.
I live in Monroe,
yep.
Which is about 30 minutes from Charlotte.
We're 25% of the population.
Yeah, 25 to 27% of the population is Latino. And you know, my family came here in 1999. So we've been in the South, in North Carolina, for 16 years. And you know, we had opportunity to go to Florida or New York or Chicago, but my dad heard that there was work here and that there was opportunity. Mm-hmm. He didn't know anyone. He only had a friend that was here already. And so he just said, well, let's go to this place that I don't even know how to pronounce. But he settled in Monroe. And then a year later, my mom and my two brothers came. And the town itself has changed. You know, just to kind of illustrate, when I graduated high school from Monroe High, it was about maybe 23% of the students were Latino. Went back this year, and 47% of the students are Latino.
And that's a similar story throughout the school systems in this city. And I think 20% of the students in this city are
mm-hmm. One in five in CMS are Latino, and one in four CMS kindergarten students are Latino.
But you rode the crest of the wave. You came in early. So I'd like to hear from you what that experience was like, because we always hear about the immigrant experience from politicians who don't know it. So let's hear it from you. You came here, you were, what, 10 years old?
I was 10 years old.
You didn't speak English. You learned to speak English how?
in school, they give you ESL classes. And so I only had that, like, maybe once or twice a week.
Uh-huh.
The way that you learn a language, especially when you're young, you talk to people and you say things that, you know, maybe not be correct. Uh-huh. But I used to just watch TV, and two of my favorite shows back then were The Simpsons and Friends. And I would always hear Joey and Friends just say, like, how you doing, right? And I thought, everyone responded to what he was saying. So I thought, well, you know, if I said it to my friends, to my teachers, to people that I know, then I would make so many friends, and that would be like Joey. That was my goal in life. Later on, I learned that, you know, it was a different connotation. But
really, I had no idea.
But to me, that was like the American way. You know, watching TV. Later, I learned, you know, the Southern way, right? And drinking sweet tea and all that good stuff.
And bless your heart.
And bless your heart.
In these small towns, where I'm assuming that prior to the arrival of the Latino population, they had little to no immigrant population. Mm-hmm. How have they adapted? How did they adapt? Were they welcoming? In your case, let's talk about Monroe, because you can only talk about what you know. Mm-hmm. Were they welcoming? Was it an easy transition for you? Was it an easy transition for them? How have you changed them? How have they changed you?
Right. Well, I think just like as I said before, changes when somebody comes to a place and changes it, whether like and you don't even know who they are, or where they're coming from, or what is the culture. It's difficult, and there was friction, there were tensions there, there were stereotypes, but you know it was. More or less, they were welcoming, and now you know. I look at the small town, and everywhere you go, you find someone that looks like me, mm-hmm. a Latino. And you know, there's people that have been there longer than I have been there. There's people that are creating businesses. That we have two Latino banks in Monroe. Hmm. We have many restaurants. There's people that are in the education. And so, you know, it's been a difficult process, but I think the community really knows that this was an asset. This was needed.
One way that you have changed this area, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, is food.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Which is one of the things that we talk about in the exhibit is how food traditions are changing when you have, you know, different people from all over the world, mm-hmm. And they bring their language, but also their food traditions, and they're blending them together, how do cultures collide in your plate. And in one of the videos that we have there, there's a young woman who says, you know, I like my biscuits with jalapenos and salsa. And, you know, and there's a young Latino woman also that says, you know, we drink sweet tea with our tacos, or, like, you know, and these are things that are changing for people, mm-hmm. and just in the simplest way, but you know, you're blending right. cultures together.
We want to hear from you about what you think the biggest challenges for our growing Latino population might be, both for the immigrants and for the community. You can reach us at WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Emily.
I was just going to add a really interesting little fact that I've learned along the way is that the most used condiment in the U.S. is no longer ketchup. It's now salsa.
Mm. And it's much better. Much more interesting than ketchup, which is just sugar and tomato sauce. Eduardo, you call the museums responsible for this exhibit, this New Evolution exhibit, Cultural Flagships in Major Receiving Communities Committed to Immigrant Integration, which you say is no small task given the legacy of racial discrimination in the Deep South and nagging anti-immigrant fervor and legislation. These are all your words. Mm-hmm. Is that what's fueling the anti-immigrant fervor, the history of racial discrimination here, do you think, or is it something else?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I don't think we can deny that. That is, unfortunately, part of the legacy of this country's history, you know, racial discrimination, institutionalized racism. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's, you know, it's just the kind of people that are being discriminated against have now changed, right? Who's been discriminated against, which is not to say that, you know, other people of color, African Americans or Asian Americans are not being discriminated against. I think clearly they are, but I think that's partly still what fuels it. And I think, you know, just change. I mean, people are coming in, they speak a different language, their customs are different. I mean, you know, I mean, people are going to, it's the same, this has been a history of how we've dealt with immigrants and new arrivals from the beginning of the history of this country. I mean, when the Jews arrived, the Irish arrived, the Italians arrived, I mean, they weren't exactly received with open arms, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, we have a history of in this country of being welcoming on the one hand, but on the other hand, wow, putting up some barriers, no? And so I do think that, you know, it's unfortunately, it's gotten to the point where people equate immigrants, like, you know, Latinos equal immigrant, right? Automatically. I mean, that's almost like the default now, right? And so, which I think is, of course, kind of ridiculous because in my case, I was born in this country. Most of the Latino community here in this country is native born, not foreign born. You know, only about 35% barely of the Latino community in this country were born outside of this country. And so, you know, we didn't cross any borders. The border crossed us, if you will. Do you know what I'm saying? And so it's this kind of, you know, I think, unfortunately, conservative politicians and others who are just threatened by these new arrivals, you know, go default back to this, oh, well, these people are different. you know, I don't know that we really want them in our community, and then it just spirals, and then you have legislation, et cetera.
Well, the fact that perhaps some of this has to do with some of this anti-immigrant fervor has to do with a past of racial discrimination. You think when you think of racial discrimination in the South, you think of the Deep South. You don't think of Charlotte. You do think of Mobile, Alabama, and Selma, and Birmingham, Alabama. And Birmingham is one of the museums that helped put this together. Is this a way for them to get over the hump, or is this because they have made such progress already, it's not a big deal for them to talk about this?
No, it is.
Go ahead.
It is definitely still a big deal, but one of the stories we tell in the exhibition is how the African-American freedom struggle serves as inspiration for immigrant rights groups.
Exactly.
And in Alabama, in Birmingham, there is a television, a radio station in La Heffa, which has been a major community organizing group, and very similar.
It's owned by a woman who
by
was
a woman,
Latina,
and who came from Mexico. She and her husband were immigrants to Birmingham, and in the exhibit we say how that parallels a radio station that was used during the civil rights movement to organize African Americans, and then there's a wonderful film of Latinos who are seeking immigration rights crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. And in fact, it's a really wonderful example of African Americans and Latinos coming together, because civil rights leaders in Birmingham and across Alabama have helped Latinos try to secure their rights. They don't want Jim Crow to be succeeded by Juan Crow. And it's really... You know, it's one of the inspiring stories in the exhibition.
How did this come together? How do these three museums work to develop this exhibit? It's hard enough for one museum to do that when you have three different museums working
on
this.
It was challenging. Yeah. It was incredibly messy, but we were all incredibly committed to making this a collaborative project that would tell what is an incredibly complicated story. And so we had those listening sessions. We synthesized into seven insights what we had learned. We had a panel of scholars from across the country who helped give us context. And then we decided, we were told repeatedly, don't simplify this story. You have to explain how complex it is.
You were told repeatedly by Latinos in these listening sessions?
Yes,
is that what you're
yes.
saying?
Okay. And even non-Latinos, that if you just distill it down into some sort of just celebratory exhibition that doesn't deal with the range of issues, don't do it. So how could we do that? And so we did something that was very different for us. We engaged a videographer, a filmmaker, Rodrigo Dorfman, who himself is an immigrant from Chile, but has lived in Durham for a long time. So he kind of really represents the Nuevo South. And he and our historian, Tom Hanchett, really crisscrossed our three states, North Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama, and with the help of our three institutions and community partners, found stories that illustrate all the range of changes. And Oliver has helped Tom and Rodrigo with lots of those stories and identifying artifacts and images and artwork that complement the video stories.
You call this a watershed exhibit, Oliver.
I think so.
Why?
Well, we opened to the public on Sunday, and I walked through when people were seeing the exhibit, and I saw families tell their children, they're like, this is our story. And I saw people that are native Southerners, or because I talked to them afterwards, or that are from the South or new to the South, and they identify with the stories that are there. These stories, I think, they're not only diverse geographically, they come from these three states. And people can identify whether you live in Tennessee or in Louisiana or whatever. But they are a range of experiences. These are the experiences that Latinos are having in the South that you may not even know that are happening. And this is an important story. And for many people, they've never heard their story told in a museum. And for many people, they've never heard these stories at all. And so, this exhibit, I think it's important not only for the receiving community to get to know the Latino community, to get to know those experiences, but also for the Latino community to understand that they're part of a larger story, they're part of a Southern history, that they're helping making change.
And one of the things, one of the questions that you pose in this exhibit and try to answer is, what does it mean to be Latino in the New South? How did you find the people whose stories you have collected and whose stories you tell?
Well, through partners, Emily said, this has been a very collaborative process. And whenever I think about the exhibit, I think about the word collaboration. We have many community partners here in Charlotte, but also in Birmingham and in Atlanta. And, you know, there is no one Latino experience in the South. There's many different experiences. And that's what we wanted to show in the exhibit, is that, you know, we have somebody that is a native born here in the U.S. We have someone that is an immigrant, a recent immigrant. We have someone that has been here for a long time and has seen this change. And so, you know, one of the things that we want people to understand after going through the exhibit is there is no one monolithic Latino. It doesn't exist, right?
And they're from 22 different countries. I mean, you know, that's the other piece. Here in Charlotte, not even half of the Latino immigrants are from Mexico. I mean, you know, and that is something we heard also in the listening sessions, is to explain the richness and the diversity within what we call Latino community.
Well, it is boiled down, when we talk about it in the broad sense, it's boiled down to very simplistic terms. All immigrants cross the border illegally from Mexico, and they're all Mexicans. And that's what you're pointing out, that it's not true, and that the story is incredibly complex with lots of different nuance. Some of the things that you tackle are things like the typical stereotypes that we hear. For instance, if history is any indication, first-generation immigrants tend to cloister together. That bothers people for some reason. they cling to their language. They cling to their customs, and that bothers people. Why can't they learn English? Why don't they be part of the – well, the second generation is the generation that begins the change, because it's hard for an adult to learn a new language. You come from a foreign country. You don't know anybody. You don't know anything about the country. You just want to work and earn a living for your family and make them better off. You haven't got time for all that. It's the second generation that, with feet planted firmly in both cultures, who not only have to make the change but have difficulties making that change. Did you have a difficulty with that?
Yeah, I mean, for my mom and my dad, like they, you know, I come from a very working class family, but they always they came here and they left everything in Mexico, all their friends, all their possessions, just to give myself and my brothers a better life. And I don't know if I would have done that. Like, I think about the courage that they had to leave everything behind and come to a place. And I think of, you know, the Italians, the families that came before the Italians, the Greeks.
The Irish.
The Irish, right? People that left everything behind and maybe they never went back. And so for me, at least for my experience, you ask, what does it mean to be Latino in the South? For me, it was complicated for a long time. I see myself as a Southerner. I see myself as a Latino. I see myself as Mexican. And so I'm from here and there, de aquí, de allá. So it's complicated.
But can you speak Spanish with a Southern accent?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Oliver Marino is with us. He is the Latino New South coordinator at the Levine Museum of the New South, along with Emily Zimmern, the president there, and Eduardo Diaz with the Smithsonian. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and South State Bank, a community bank with Southern roots since 1934, focusing on commercial banking, private banking, and wealth management. Information available at southstatebank.com. And Children's Theater of Charlotte presenting Elephant and Piggies, We Are in a Play, based on the children's book series by Mo Willems. Now through October the 11th, tickets available online at ctcharlotte.org. This week, President Obama is addressing the UN General Assembly. He did so yesterday. He's meeting with world leaders, including Russian President Vladimir Putin. And on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes, they look at new tests for U.S. leadership, prospects for cooperation in Syria, and the fight against ISIS. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Want to join our conversation? Now's the time. Search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're coming right back.
At WFAE, our job is to listen to you. And one of the things we've heard is that you understand why we have pledge drives but wish they didn't last so long. You've heard us say that more than half of our annual operating income comes from listener contributions. Well, by listening to you, we have a plan to shorten the fall membership campaign. Our goal is to raise $400,000 over 7 days. But for every $60,000 raised before the drive begins, we'll eliminate a day. It's up to you. Contribute now at WFAE.org. Thank you.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about New Evolution, which is on exhibit at the Levine Museum of the New South here downtown at College and 7th through October 30th, 2016. Emily Zimmern's the president of the Levine Museum of the New South. Oliver Marino is the Latino New South coordinator there. And Eduardo Diaz is director of the Smithsonian Latino Center. We were talking in the break off the air, Eduardo, about this exhibit, which is going to be in residence here for over a year, and then it moves to Birmingham, then it moves to Atlanta. The Smithsonian already has its eyes on it, and I'm told that you're thinking about developing a smaller version of this for the Smithsonian that might tour to other cities.
Well, we have the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service is a unit of the Smithsonian that develop shows for traveling purposes or repurposes larger shows like this one into smaller traveling versions, if you will. And my thought was, I had an experience, again, it goes back to my own personal experience. I did a Hispanic Heritage program in Tifton, Georgia, which is a small town in southeastern Georgia, in wiregrass country, very close to Valdosta. I mean, that's where I flew into. So, I'm thinking, okay, so they have there's a museum there that's affiliated with an agricultural college there, the Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College. So Revolution, as it exists today, would not fit in that museum probably, right? So I'm wondering, what about places like Monroe, or what about places like Asheville? I don't know. I mean, other communities in North Carolina or South Carolina or throughout the South, which might not have the capacity, right, to take a show like it is on the New Evolution show the way it is and the size of it. And I'm wondering, could we, through the Traveling Exhibition Service here, do a truncated version of the show and tour it to places in the rural areas, so in the smaller towns.
Right. And I'm wondering, this exhibit's going to be here in residence for so long that by the time it gets to Atlanta, because it goes through Birmingham first, and I'm sure they'll keep it for a while, how many changes, Emily, will have to go through this exhibit, because a lot of it's happening so quickly, this change, that by the time it gets to Atlanta, it may be way out of date.
I don't think so. I don't think the stories, the video stories that are the heart of the exhibit are really timeless.
Okay.
Oliver, would you comment on that? Because I think some of the text panels that give statistics might have to be updated.
Right.
But the heart of the exhibit really tells powerful personal stories behind the statistics. And they're going to be equally compelling no matter what the context has been, because they really reflect lived experience of people.
Yeah, one of the stories that comes to mind is of Neftali Cuello, who was born in California, moved to eastern North Carolina to work in the tobacco fields. And she tells her story of her experience working there. And here's where, throughout the exhibit, we try to make those connections to Southern history. And as many of you may know, child labor was very much part of the South. It was one of the reasons why it grew, right? And so, that story, people that read it, people that see that video, mm-hmm. they are touched because they never have heard the story. And so that story, I think, it's as Emily said, it doesn't really date, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's, things may change around policies and all that sort of stuff, but that story itself, won't change. Her experience is there.
We have an email from somebody who calls herself Tatiana, and it's the subject of her email is My Latina Point of View. She writes, I just have to say, as a Puerto Rican woman, even though we are common. It is still very hard to live here and start a life here in the Charlotte area. We moved here 10 months ago. I haven't found any Puerto Rican friends except in the Puerto Rican Festival a few months ago, where I felt just like home for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Even though we are part of the U.S., that would be Puerto Rico, at heart we are Latinos. We are not Americans first. We speak Spanish, we eat rice and beans every day, and we dance every Saturday when we clean. We dance to salsa. We love people, we love to laugh, we love the outdoors, and we love family and friends. Most of these things I haven't found here in Charlotte, and we feel alone. Even though it's beautiful here, we feel like outsiders. It also doesn't help that where we work, we are not understood when we are so outgoing. We have to learn to blend. Not easy. Is that one particular experience, or have you heard that echoed in other people's experiences?
Well, I would say come to Uptown it's Saturday night, and there's different places to go to. But you know, that's for many immigrants, just coming to a new place, as we said, it's difficult. And you know, there's people that don't understand that that people coming from Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens. I was at a grocery store a few months ago, and you know, somebody from Puerto Rico was presenting their Puerto Rican driver's license, and they wouldn't take it. They thought it was a foreign driver's license, right? Or
right. In one of the listening sessions, that was what someone said when she moved to Charlotte. This was a long time ago. She said she was standing in the bank line, and the teller waited on her and said, "Where are you from?" And she said, "Puerto Rico." And the teller said, "Where in Mexico is Puerto Rico?"
You know, I just thought we were ignorant of the rest of the world, not our own country.
Well, you know, but I would say, I would urge Tatiana to come to Levine Museum in the New South, yeah, because really what we're going to be doing for the next year and forever ongoing, I mean, we really want to bring people together. That's what we do. We really believe that shared stories build community, and that this whole exhibition, we really want to be a catalyst for cross-cultural interaction, and that we need, you know, people to understand one another. A number of years ago, we did Courage in the City, which brought African-American and Latino groups to see two exhibits about African-American history and Latino history, and it was amazing the connections that were made. And you know, unfortunately, what you said previously, all newcomers kind of cluster with people like themselves because that's where you feel at home and comfortable. But in a place like Charlotte, where there are people from everywhere, we really have to do bridge building. We have to provide opportunities for people from different backgrounds to come together.
That's one of the things that this exhibit is trying to accomplish here. You're trying to put pins in balloons that have been blown up. One of the topics you explore is how people grapple with issues like identity and belonging and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is, are these issues that are mostly of concern to the actual first generation immigrant, or is this something that the second generation also grapples with?
Well, one of the things that we learned through the listening sessions was that that biculturalism is growing. That people that feel themselves and identify with the culture and the country of their parents, but also they feel themselves American. You know, how do you kind of blend the two of them? Can you do that? And the second part of the exhibit talks about identity. Like, what does it mean to be Southern? What does it mean to be American? What does it mean to be Latino in the South?
What does it mean?
Right. Well, I can tell you about my experience, but you know, for many people, it's a different experience. And okay, so, you know, how do people see you? Right. Many people may not see me as a Southerner, but I very much feel like it. Right. Mm. And so, you know, it's identity itself. It's a very complicated issue.
Well, another issue that you tackle is one that we seem to be coming to grips with in this presidential cycle, and that is how Latinos and non-Latinos relate to each other. This is a homogenous area of the country. It always has been pretty insular. And suddenly we have this influx of Latinos. Is it more difficult for us to relate to these newcomers than it would be for other parts of the country because we have very limited experience?
Yeah, it's really interesting you raise that, Mike, because really one of the genesis of this Latino New South project from, it may have been 10 years ago, Tom Hanchett and I were out at UNC Charlotte, and Roberto Suro, who at that time was head of the Pew Hispanic Center, he was talking about the South and how Charlotte might be the case study 100 years from now in this latest wave of immigration. And one of the things he said was, is that because the South didn't experience the great waves of European immigration, we don't know about accommodating and integrating immigrants. We just don't, we haven't had that experience because people didn't come here. And he cited actual studies where if you control people of the same political persuasion, education, ethnic background in North Carolina and California, that in the South, the attitudes were more, if not anti-immigrant, unsettled by immigration, because we don't have that practice. And so this is new for us.
Let's compare these cities that you're a partner with. I mean, Atlanta is a big city. Charlotte is a big, big town, big, big, small town.
Right.
It's not Atlanta. So how have our two cities accommodated? How have we – how can you compare how we – the two
well,
cities
it's really interesting. What we learned in our listening sessions is that our three cities are actually at different stages.
Okay.
Atlanta grew more quickly earlier and had a much larger Cuban immigration than Charlotte did. So it's kind of farther along. It has more organizations. It's developed more infrastructure to accommodate newcomers. And then Charlotte is sort of we've second. And then Birmingham has the most recent integration immigrants coming in. And so it's really been interesting to sort of see our three cities on the spectrum of different stages of that experience.
I don't know, Eduardo, if you can answer this question, because we've been here sitting here talking, because the point of this exhibit is about how Latinos are changing the South and how the South is changing them. But when you look at Latino immigration in other parts of the United States, is there a similarity or are we completely different from them?
I don't think that there's, I mean, yes and no. I mean, you know, I just, after I went to the opening in Charlotte this past, the pre-reception, if you will, on Friday, yes, Friday, I left for Omaha, right, Omaha, Nebraska, right, to meet with a group of young artists and administrators there, Latino. And, you know, so you have a new wave of immigrants happening, taking place in the heartland, right? And Omaha is just one city. It's Kansas City, it's Indianapolis, so forth, Des Moines. On the other hand, you have Mexican population that was there when Omaha was founded in 1854, right? So you have a native Mexican population in Omaha, that, and then there was later migrations because of the railroad or because of meatpacking or what have you. So yes and no. I mean, this is where, you know, and we've talked about the complexity of Latino immigration and migration, because it's not just an immigrant issue. Like my point that I made before, it's not all of us are immigrants, right? Many of us were born here. People move, right? But I think what's happening in the South that I think is distinctive, perhaps, is the level of growth. One, just the size of it. Right, the sheer demographic of it, and the fact that movement is no longer determining the Latino growth rate in the South. It's birth rate. So birth rate implies settlement. These people are not going anywhere. Our community is not leaving. When Oliver's family came to Monroe, it was to stay. It wasn't a migratory thing that they were doing, right? So I think this is what I think is interesting about the South, is that the communities are staying. They're establishing businesses. They're changing the culture, right? Barbecue joints are being turned into taquerias. You know, it's what's really that's an important thing, settlement versus movement.
The other thing that you talk about in this exhibit is the fact that, and you've already mentioned this once, that the Latino culture is not a monolith. People from Colombia and Ecuador are different from people from Mexico. They have different cultural, they have moments, they have different foods. What do we gain from knowing that?
Well, I think just to know who's your neighbor, right? Who are, you know, you may be working with them, or you may be going to places, or maybe like your friends, you don't even know that where they're coming from and the different cultures that they're bringing.
And if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that Latinos also struggle with this because they don't know. People from Mexico don't necessarily know people from Chile or their customs.
Exactly.
Or even their language. There are differences in Spanish.
Exactly. So that's one of the things that we gain from the listening sessions is that these bridges need to be created not only between the Latino community and the receiving community, but also between Latinos and other Latinos.
We only have a couple minutes left, but you point out in this exhibit that the words Latino and Hispanic are U.S. creations.
Absolutely.
This is not how people outside our borders think of themselves. Right. How do you think of yourselves outside our borders?
Well, right. Most people see themselves as the country of origin. So I mean, they may see us Colombian or Argentinian or Mexican or Peruvian. And actually, on Sunday, there was a group of a family who was from Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And there we have the people from Costa Rica, they're called Ticos. Mm-hmm. And they were telling their children, like, I'm a Tico, but their children, the young boy, he was born here, so he's American. And so they were having a conversation about, you know, who you are and then, like, what is, again, this issue of identity and how complicated it is.
What do you hope people take away from this?
I want to end on something that's incredibly positive that I heard 10 years ago from the first Latinas in Charlotte I ever met. And we were hosting a very small exhibit from the Smithsonian, actually, Los Americanos. And we wanted to learn about Latinos coming to Charlotte. And what they said was there were women there from Venezuela, Peru, Colombia, and Mexico. And they said, we moved to Charlotte because we like the South, because the South believes in food, faith, and family just like we do.
Wow. Emily Zimmern is president of the Levine Museum of the New South. Oliver Marino is the Latino New South coordinator there. And Eduardo Diaz joined us from the Smithsonian. He's the director of the Smithsonian Latino Center. The exhibit New Evolution is in place at the Levine through October 30th of next year. But don't wait a whole year to go. You can come now. Thank you all for the hour.